right, we have one case on our 10:30 docket in the interest of SADS. If the clerk will please announce counsel. All right, thank you. Mr. Moraine.
Good morning.
Morning.
Your Honors, mediated settlement agreements are something that are used by family law lawyers and courts every day in our judicial district to resolve cases, reduce controversies, move dockets along, and look out for the best interest of children. As family law lawyers, we have to rely and be able to rely on the predictability of results that are reached by virtue of those mediated settlement agreements. We have to, when we go into mediations to reach mediated settlement agreements, we carefully consider the words that are used in those agreements. Often there's significant controversy involved in drafting those agreements. And those agreements say what they say for purposes that are known to the lawyers and perhaps known to the court. It has long been the rule in this state, that's at least 1939, that if we have an agreement, and if the judgment is to be based on an agreement, particularly under the family code, an agreement reached at mediation, the trial court has no power to add provisions in the order that are not agreed to at the time of rendition of judgment and that were not contained within the mediated settlement agreement. This is an important case. This is an important case from the standpoint that it will affect the way that family law is practiced here in Texas. It will affect the way that family law is practiced in this judicial district and this region. In this case, CPS sought to terminate the rights of parental rights of my clients in regards to SADS. And they did it by showing up at a hospital when the child was born and removing the child from the hospital. The grounds for removal were that the mother had previously, 6-7 years ago, had other children removed. They gave my client a service plan to do, which she completed. They required her to go get employed. Not only did she go get employed, but she did so well at her employment that she was promoted to manager. At the hearing to enter the order, the department testified that, quote, she jumped through every hoop that they'd given her to do. Not surprisingly, on the eve of the termination trial, the trial court sent this case to mediation, and we spent, four parties, spent the better part of a full day carefully mediating and crafting a mediated settlement that we thought was not only in the best interest of the child, but provided a good long-range and long-term solution for the best interest of these children and for all the parties that were involved. As part of that mediation.
Let me ask a question.
Yes.
This really probably isn't in the record, but does Denton not have any standing orders regarding mediation for family law cases?
We have we sort of do. It depends on who's mediating the case. If we're using DCAP, which is our county-funded program, mm-hmm. then DCAP promulgates an order and requests that the court uses that order to send the cases to mediation. And more often than not, the court will use that order because that order has been created as a cooperative effort between our family law bar and DCAP and the judges, and so it has the language in it that we all want in it. But in this case, the case was sent to mediation. Both sides agreed to mediate. The order sending the case to mediation was agreed. It was not contested. And the case went to mediation. We did, in fact, reach a settlement in mediation. Both sides waived their right to a jury trial on any of the issues not treated in the mediated settlement agreement. We both sides stipulated that we would enter an order that was based strictly on the mediated settlement agreement. Initially, an order was not prepared. We prepared a draft of an order and presented it to the court. The department also prepared a draft and submitted it to the court. The only difference between the two orders was the inclusion of a judicial finding that placement of the children with my client would endanger their physical safety or their emotional development. That judicial finding was not provided for in the mediated settlement agreement, nor had we agreed that it would have been made. Obviously, we can't go into the contents of settlement discussions of mediation, but suffice it to say that after 8 hours of mediation, when we emerged from there, we had a mediated settlement agreement that didn't contain anything about the court making judicial findings or submitting any of those issues to the trial court, for the trial court to be able to hear those issues and make those findings. When CPS showed up at the hearing to enter the order, they asked that the court make those judicial findings. They stipulated they were not included in the mediated settlement agreement, but they wanted the court to make them outside of the MSA.
Excuse me, can I ask
yes.
a question
yes,
or throw it out for you to discuss as you go along?
Yes, thank you.
Based on everything you said, this is a mediated settlement agreement. But the court also makes a finding that it is an agreed parenting plan pursuant to 153007.
Yes,
judgment.
It does.
Does that change anything?
I don't believe that it does, because an agreed parenting plan can be reached by virtue of a mediated settlement. You can go and mediate, and the product that comes out of the mediation is an agreed parenting plan. There's two differences under the family code between just a straight MSA that's going to get turned into an order and an agreed parenting plan that's presented to the court. If the court found that the parenting plan, that the MSA was the agreed parenting plan and was in the best interest of the child, which it did, then its option under the family code was to sign off and enter that parenting plan as is without adding or subtracting anything to or from it. If it found that the agreed parenting plan was not in the best interest of the child, as contained with the MSA, it could reject it, which it didn't do. Or it could, at that point in time, announce to the parties that I don't find this to be in the best interest of the child, so what I'm going to do is provide notice and hearing. We're going to come back on another day. You guys get your witnesses here. We'll put on the evidence, and then I'll make whatever additional findings I need to make. That didn't happen either. Under the section involving that, that's what to do if a parenting plan is in the best interest of the child or not in the best interest of the child. If you don't have something that's found to contain all the elements of a agreed parenting plan, but it's still a mediated settlement agreement, the remedies are essentially the same, although they vary a little bit. The court can accept the MSA as is, and it has to enter an order in strict conformance with the terms of the MSA, or it can reject it as not being in the best interest of the child and refuse to enter it. But in this case, the court found that the mediated settlement agreement, the stuff within its four quarters, was in the best interest of the child. So it didn't reject it, and we didn't get to the point where it said, okay, we're going to recess, come back for a final trial. And that's the difference between those two. There's really two core issues, as I see it in this case. The first one is whether or not the court can add terms that are in our final order, which is based on a mediated settlement agreement or based on an agreement of the parties, that are outside of that agreement when those terms aren't consented to. We know that it can't. We know it because you guys have said it in a couple of cases just in the last 12 months, but we also know it because since 1939 in Matthews versus Looney, the Texas Supreme Court has consistently held that you can't do that. In Looney, the court said, the court has, quote, no power to supply terms, provisions, or essential details not previously agreed to by the parties. And that has consistently been the law of our state because our courts have always recognized, and this court has recognized, and the Supreme Court has recognized, that for us to be able to handle the level of cases that we need to handle, to be able to resolve those by agreement, we have got to be able to rely on the contents of those agreements. We've got to be able to rely that our agreements that we reached are going to be enforced and put in place the way that we agreed to them without some fear that a court could come along later and unilaterally change it over the objection of one of the parties. Now it's kind of interesting in the state's brief they talk about an unpublished case that was decided on July 23rd in 2009. Justice Livingston was actually the author of that opinion. In that case, the department writes on page 7 of its brief, by the way, the department says that K&M stands for the proposition that mediated settlement agreements are not necessarily governed by Section 153.0071 of the Family Code, which specifically involves mediated settlement agreements. But they say that K&M stands for the proposition that mediated settlement agreements can be judged according to some other rules. I think the state's just wrong about that. On page 7 of its brief, the state writes, in K&M, the mediated settlement agreement was referred to this court as a Rule 11 agreement. As everyone knows, in K&M, there was no mediated settlement agreement. In fact, the court goes to great detail and length to point that out, that there was no mediated settlement agreement. The court writes, a mediation occurred on October 24, 2007, but no settlement was reached. Footnote 6, when the court is distinguishing its ruling in K&M from rulings involving MSAs, this was not a mediated settlement agreement under either Section 6.602 or Section 153.0071C(e), that's our section, of the Family Code. In K&M, what happened, the result of that case was entirely predictable. Two parties went to mediation. The mediation failed. They then arrived in court and they reached an agreement amongst themselves regarding these children. Now, the department was a party to this case, so they knew what this case stood for. They went on the record with a court reporter in open court and they entered into a Rule 11 agreement on the record with regards to what the final orders were going to be in the best interest of these children. At that hearing, when they went on the record and put that Rule 11 agreement on the record, Judge Gabriel, who was the trial judge, rendered her order, orally pronounced it in open court on the record. So we had a rendition. Some things happened in K&M and a written order did not get reduced, tendered to the court immediately. And lo and behold, one of the parties sought to withdraw their consent to the Rule 11 agreement. When Judge Gabriel, the trial judge, would not allow that to happen and went ahead and entered an order in conformance with the Rule 11 agreement, that party appealed, saying that, no, this was an agreed judgment. We should be allowed to revoke our consent at any time up until the judgment is signed. Well, Rule 11 jurisprudence is a little bit different than what we're talking about, and what Rule 11 jurisprudence says, as you know, is that if we have a Rule 11 agreement that is orally pronounced or tendered to the court, somehow communicated to the court, a party is free to withdraw their consent to that, and you can't enter a judgment on it, but you can't do it after the court's entered judgment. You've got to do it prior to the court rendering judgment. In K&M, the court had already rendered judgment. In our case, we objected to the inclusion of the finding prior to the time that the court rendered judgment. In our case, we have a real live mediated settlement agreement. It's on paper. It's filed with the court. That was the basis for the court's order. In fact, if you analyze K&M, K&M really supports my client's position in this case. K&M, again, reiterates that when you have an agreement, the court has to enter an order that's in conformance with that agreement. It can't change that agreement. It can't modify that agreement on its own. It can't add things to or subtract things to that agreement. The state makes a second point in its brief in which it says, basically, look, this finding that the trial court has to make is required in every single case, regardless if the case is resolved by agreement or not. If the court is going to appoint a non-parent as a managing conservator, it is required to make that finding that we have objected to. It's absolutely wrong. In K&M, this court recognized that and said when there's an agreement, the Chapter 153 presumption disappears because the agreement solves it. The court in San Antonio in Gardner versus Gardner said the same thing. It said, look, when you're proceeding under the basis of an MSA and the parties have agreed that there is a non-parent that should be named as a managing conservator, it is the agreement itself that overcomes the presumption, and the court does not need to make that finding to support a proper judgment. So that finding was not required to be made by the trial court. It was error for the trial court to make that finding. Especially over the objection of Nicole. And we're asking this court to either reverse the trial court or reform the judgment and strike that finding.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Moran. Ms. Simmons?
May it please the court, counsel. I would like to first start off today responding to appellant's reply brief that the state made embellished the facts and the statement of facts in this case in an attempt to inflame the court. I did not file a response to that. I have gone back and looked at the record in my brief. The statement of facts basically that I laid out in there was what were the facts that was known to the state and the trial court at the time that led to the removal of the child from the mother. Most of those facts are not going to be in the reporter's record because we did not have a full hearing. They were, however, stemmed from an affidavit that was filed with the trial court with the petition, original petition in this case. And those are the facts that I relied on. My references to the reporter's record or to very general references such as the mother's name, et cetera, just because the appellate rules of procedure require that I cite to the reporter's record. So because there was not a lot of testimony at the court, I was merely setting up the background information on what began the case at the birth of the child, what information was known to the trial court and the state at that time. And furthermore, the statement of the facts is really irrelevant as to the legal issues that are before the court today, which is why I did not file a response brief to those allegations by counsel. What is before the court today is the mediated settlement agreement that was issued in this case. Now, the state intends to prove that the mediated settlement agreement should comply with Section 153.131 of the Texas Family Code when parties agree at any point to appoint a non-parent as a managing conservator of a child, whether that appointment be made by the court or whether the parties agree to such. Section 153.131 is entitled that it is a presumption. It is a presumption in any case that a parent shall be named the managing conservator of the child or joint managing conservators with another parent of that child unless, and it says, unless there's been a history of domestic violence, that's specifically right there, that's your escape route, or unless there's a best interest finding by the court that naming the parent as the managing conservator would not be in the best interest. Stop right there. Parties have agreed to that. What does best interest mean under 153.131? It means that the not be in the best interest of the child as to their emotional development and their physical health. Those words define what best interest means under 153.131. The parties in this case fully agree it is not in the best interest of the mother to have managing conservatorship of this child, that her father should be the managing conservator. He is the child's grandfather. She admitted that. That is before the court. That is an agreement between the parties that it is not in the best interest. When the state presented its order to the trial court, the only difference from that order and appellant's order is the definition of best interest under 153.131, which is mandated by that section when a non-parent is named as a managing conservator of a child. The state would argue that the mediated settlement agreement in this case is governed under 153.007, which was also a finding by the trial court to which no objection was made to during the final hearing, and that it is an agreed parenting plan under 153.007. 153.007 specifically deals with settlement disputes between parties that are dealing with provisions of conservatorship and possession of the child. Specifically deals with that. And when you talk about conservatorship of a child, you necessarily have to deal with the parental presumption that exists by statute that the parent will be named unless.
Can I ask you a question? What is a presumption? A presumption is a rule of law that determines who has the burden of proof or what facts will establish evidence or from which other facts can be inferred, right? I mean, doesn't that have to do with evidence that would be proved on a trial?
Well, I think it would if you were going to a trial, but then likewise, if you're going into an agreed mediated settlement, the presumption doesn't just disappear. I don't believe that the parties can go to a mediated settlement agreement and circumvent the best interest of the child finding in this case.
Why not? Why wouldn't the presumption just fall out of the case? If there's not a trial, what difference does it make who had the burden of proof?
I really don't think that it goes down to the burden of it goes down to the evidence, what the ultimate finding of the child is. I'm trying to break it down the best I can. Chapter 153, the overall concern of the entire chapter is the best interest of the child. And I don't believe that the parties are able to go into a mediated settlement agreement and agree to not go to trial and then come to an agreement on what they'll do to avoid trial and also simultaneously avoid a finding that this is in the best interest of the child. If it weren't in the best interest of the child, the trial court wouldn't accept it, and we would not be in an agreed mediated settlement. The parents agree it's in the best interest of the child. They just don't want anyone to know what the best interest of the child is. They don't want to tell you that it was a specific finding. Of course, it has to be a specific finding.
But that's what they agreed. They didn't want that in there, or it would have been in there. Well, the trial court made a finding that it was in the best interest of the child to have this agreement.
Absolutely.
And so why does the department need an additional finding that naming the mom as the permanent conservator is not interested in the interest of the child? Why does it need that finding?
I would first say because it is mandated by the code that we do that, that we if the mother is not going to be named, or the father, as a managing conservator, it has to be because the parents, if the parents were to be appointed as managing conservator, it would not be in the best interest of the child's specifically physical health, mental or emotional development. And it specifically says that. So you can't say, or if the parties just say, we agree that we'll give the baby to grandpa.
Well, under your interpretation then, wouldn't you basically be rewriting all the provisions on settlement agreements that are contained within the family code to say you can agree and contractually agree on anything except where you want to name someone other than a parent as managing conservator?
I don't believe that I would be attempting to ask this court to rewrite any statute because that provision is already in the statute. It is in the statute that is a required finding, that it's mandatory on the courts to make that finding. And the parties may agree to what the material terms of the mediated agreement are, but all the trial court in this case did was expand the one sentence to define what it is. Otherwise, you're left to an inference. Let's say that later on something else in this case occurs and the mother is wanting to have her children back, or there's a new case. Well, what was the original finding in this case from the beginning? Not in the best interest. For what purposes? Not in the best interest because of sexual abuse, of unsafe living conditions, failure to meet the parenting plan. For what reasons? Well, the court made no finding as to that. So then we're back to square one.
Ms. Simmons, what authority do you have that provides that under a mediated settlement under 153.0071, you must have a finding that refutes the presumption that's erased by 153.131? What case? Where a grandparent is being appointed by the mediated settlement. In other words, I'm feeling like what your position is that 153.0071 can't allow the parties in a mediated settlement agreement to award children to a person other than a parent without having some specific finding as to a reason why the parent was not qualified or it was in the best interest of the children to not have one of the parents be the managing conservator. That's your position. And I'm asking you, is there any place that you have a case? I looked at your cases you cited in your brief on page 10 and the other places where you recited various phases of this. But if I'm understanding you, it's your position that we're in the case of first impression in deciding if we did that 171, the 153.0071E would control in this situation without a finding related to 153.131.
The state's primary argument in this case is that the agreed parenting plan at issue here is actually governed by 153.007. Appellant would like to couch it that it's governed by 153.0071 because it appears that there are more strict requirements in there and that that section does not specifically apply to the conservatorship issue of children as 153.007 does. 153.007 specifically deals with conservatorship and is a lot more specific than 153.0071, which is why the appellant wants to go to that section. Also, he has opinions from Dallas and Houston courts who have said that you're not going to make a best interest finding under the family code under a 153.0071 case. Again, I would distinguish that we're not dealing with a 153.007 case. We're dealing with a 153.007 case, specifically dealing with conservatorship, and our trial court specifically found that 153.007 governs and is an agreed parenting plan thereunder. No parties objected that that was the governing statute here. And the state is merely saying, and will also acknowledge that that I don't have case law that's going to stand behind me and say that under 153.007 that a trial court is mandated to make that best interest finding under 153.131. But the state would argue that the best interest finding overall is the primary purpose of Chapter 153. And when you deal with a specific topic such as the conservatorship of a child, which 153.07 allows you to do in a mediated settlement agreement, you cannot do that without ignoring the parental presumption which exists in 153.131, because 153.131 says the parent will be unless this is found.
So your position is that 153.131 trumps and is the dominant statute in defining what can be handled in a mediated settlement agreement without a court finding that rebuts or destroys the presumption.
I agree that it is a required finding that has to be made by the trial court, and that the parties' agreement during the mediated settlement agreement that the appointment of a non-parent as managing conservator of the child impliedly means that it's not in the best interest because of what is defined as best interest in a conservatorship, that it would not be in the best interest of the physical health or the emotional development. I don't believe that the parties can say that 153.007 is more specific of a statute than 153.131. I know looking at a lot of these case laws, they talk about which one for statutory interpretation purposes is more specific versus which one is more general, which one gets to trump which one. And I think from a common sense standpoint, we have to first start with dealing with they both exist and they both mean something. And going back to statutory construction case law, if you can give effect to both of those statutes, there's no reason to discard one of the statutes and claim the other makes more sense. These can work together.
And the presumption that we're interested in allowing parties to resolve their litigation through mediated settlement agreements, wouldn't that apply to helping of the balancing out of these two areas of statutory that might be looking at statutory conflict? In other words, doesn't the fact that we want parties to work out mediated settlement agreements and to move forward with them based on those agreements, doesn't that have to nudge us towards the idea that 153.131 is not something that has to be specifically dealt with when there's a mediated settlement situation?
The state would just argue that parental termination cases and the cases dealing with the best interest of these children require a high threshold of evidence to prove that what the state is doing in these actions is justified, and that the mother, by making an agreed mediated settlement, has been able to avoid going to trial and dealing with all of the accusations that are going to be thrown at her, and making a defense to that by stating, okay, I will go ahead and defer and concede that being with me is not in the best interest of my child, just as my other four children were not in their best interest.
But we didn't see that she did that. She didn't get a trial on that issue.
Because she waived the trial and said that not making her the conservator was in her child's best interest, that the grandfather was in the best interest of the child. She admitted that it's not in the child's best interest. She just does not want to say what best interest means, and it's specific. And even if this court disagrees with the state that we don't have to make a specific finding, what that does is take out the sentence because it would cause physical health and emotional detriment to the child. I'm not saying that's going to help one party over the other. I'm not real sure why the mother was upset about that to begin with. All it is defining a legal term. But if this court were not to agree with me that this is a specific finding needs to be made, then this trial court could just remove that sentence and affirm the judgment as modified, and that would be a result. But I, again, was just trying to make a point as to the specific language and the best interest and the amount of deference that we should give to these cases for children.
Thank you, Ms. Simmons. Mr. Moraine.
Thank you, Your Honor. We do know, we have a pretty good idea how the interaction should play out between Chapter 153 presumption and 153.0071, the mediation provision, and 153.007, the agreed parenting plan provision. And we know that based on some language that Justice Livingston wrote in KNEM, in which she wrote, to the extent that Martha's argument is based on her contention that Daphne did not overcome the Chapter 153 presumption, that a parent acts in his or her child's best interest, permitting a grandparent to obtain court-ordered access only upon a showing that denial of access will, quote, significantly impair the child's physical health or emotional well-being. That's the language that we have in our case. We hold that the issue was resolved by the settlement agreement. See Family Code, annotated section 153.007. That's the agreed parenting plan provision. With regards to the state's contention that they have a high threshold of evidence that they must meet in these cases before the trial court can make findings, certainly there's no dispute about that. One of our points in our brief is quite simply that they did not meet that high threshold of evidence to be able to support those findings. With regards to the state's argument, just a brief reply that they were citing facts that were not in front of the court as facts in the records to support their findings, that they pulled facts that were in the clerk's record. Stuff that's in the clerk's record is not in evidence. We filed an objection to that. We filed our reply brief and pointed that out to the court. I think it speaks for itself. I don't believe that there is a good faith dispute in this case that what we have is a mediated settlement agreement. We have a document. It has four corners. It says mediated settlement agreement at the front. It recites in it, this was reached in mediation pursuant to the Family Code. It cites the provisions in the Family Code. 1.53.0071 gives us specific ways to enforce and remedies if the court chooses not to enforce that mediated settlement agreement. We discussed those earlier. Section 153.007 has requirements for a written parenting plan. Those two statutes are not, or those two provisions of the Family Code are not in conflict. One says these are the requirements for an agreement to constitute an agreed parenting plan. We know that agreed parenting plans can arise in mediation. They can arise in a mediated settlement, where if they are, the enforcement provisions related to those mediated settlements apply. But agreed parenting plans can also arise other places. They can arise in a Rule 11 agreement that wasn't reached in mediation. They can arise by an oral agreement of the parties that was placed on the record in open court that meets the requirements of an agreed parenting plan and that are accepted by the court. And The point is, those two provisions are not mutually exclusive. Those two provisions say we have one thing that constitutes an agreed parenting plan. If we have something that hits those elements, it's an agreed parenting plan. If it was reached at mediation, there's some other stuff that applies to it.
And wasn't there also a provision in the mediated settlement agreement about the parties waiving the right to have issues tried?
Yes.
Other than the enforcement of the agreement?
Yes.
And doesn't that inure to the benefit of both the mother and the department?
Yes.
Another question, was this a modification of a prior conservatorship?
No.
Okay.
That's all I have.
All right, thank you, Mr. Moraine.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Simmons. We appreciate your briefing and your arguments today. We appreciate you coming to Fort Worth as well. We hope that you have a safe trip back. If the clerk will now adjourn us.